Why don't we start just by, since I record all these calls for anybody who misses the call and for the public, could everyone just go around and say their name and their position on the council, their representation, however you want to put it?
Sure, I'll start. This is Paige from Galloway. I represent the Texas State Affordable Housing Corporation.
Jean Langendorf, I am a governor's appointee.
Mark Wyatt with Texas Department of Agriculture.
And Ashley Schweikert from TDHCA is here, as well as Elizabeth Yevich.
Also from TDHCA.
And, I think someone else just joined.
Mike Goodwin.
Hey, Mike, how's it going?
Sorry for being late. I was involved in something that just stopped.
Not a problem, Mike.
We just started. So we have, Mike, we have Mark, Paige, and Jean on the phone. So given that there are four of you this time, so I got one more than last time, is it possible for us to appoint a committee chair this time around?
Well, who's not here? Let's appoint one of them.
Sherry and Kenneth are also on this committee. And we basically, in terms of the committee chair position, the way that Jonas likes to put it, Jonas, who is the chair now for the Service Issues Committee, that, you know, just somebody to make sure that if there are any responsibilities assigned to other council members, that we make sure that everybody is providing the information that they need to provide to the council coordinator, myself, so that I can do my job as best as possible. That's really the job of the committee chair, is just to be the to be the follow-up.
Yes. So with that in mind, who's volunteering?
That sounded like Jesus volunteered.
That was Elizabeth.
Yeah, that was me. Jean, Paige?
No, I'm not volunteering. I can't do it.
Okay. Understood.
Yeah, my problem is I don't know how I'm going to be affected, but I'm getting ready to start a project down in Florida that's going to have me down there quite a bit. And my concern is not being around for the calls.
Okay, we appreciate that, Mike. Paige or Mark, or should we hold off until next week and help we get more on the phone?
I'd do it, but I don't know where I'm in my future either, but I'd be glad to help in any way.
Well, Mark, why don't we say, just for the interim for right now, that you would fulfill this, and then we'll just take it as it goes.
If it helps you, I'll do it.
There we go. Sounds like a plan. Thank you, Mark.
Thank you.
Right. Thank you, sir.
Mark, all right. So we have that one done. I also, wasn't on the agenda, but it was emailed out. I just wanted to see if any revisions that anyone had to the write-up that I drafted from our last committee conference call regarding the budget recommendations made by this committee. The only response I got by email was Jean, and she didn't have any changes to the draft, so I just wanted to see if there were any changes to that draft.
Okay. I didn't have any.
Okay.
All right, so no edits. Okay. Thank you for that. And then the next item on the agenda was, given our last conference call, in terms of next steps for this committee, there was a discussion by the council members on looking at capital financing policies as they relate to service-enriched housing. So we talked about both TDHCA and TSHAC policies. So what I thought we could do today was start with TDHCA. And the documents that I sent out yesterday afternoon, there were two concerning the qualified allocation plan for housing tax credits, and then there was one concerning the consolidated plan. So starting with the qualified allocation plan handouts, there was a summary of three sections of the qualified allocation plan, which I think you could say, are the meat of the way that the funding is allocated. The 50.6, 50.8, and 50.9 concern the allocation of funding by the selection criteria and the threshold criteria. And I think that might be where the recommendations that this committee was looking to make, where those could be made, would be in these three sections of the QAP. And then the second document that I sent out to everybody was a table, and that was just for easy referencing purposes to understand the selection criteria, and that's broken down by the number of points available from the largest point allocation to the least. And then I also wanted to present to you all which of those selection criteria have been prioritized by the state legislature through Texas Government Code, and which ones have been prioritized by the IRS through the Internal Revenue Code, and which ones overlap and have citations in both. So that being said, that information, I wanted to just be able to have a discussion on where the policy direction would go for this particular funding source, given that it came up many times in our last discussion, our last conference call, in wanting to utilize the housing tax credit funding source for service-enriched housing purposes.
What are you asking of us? I'm not sure. I understand.
Well, given the conference call we had 2 weeks ago, the direction for this committee was to make policy recommendations regarding our capital financing policies. So I wanted to start with the qualified allocation plan. And I was hoping that providing the breakdown of how the scoring structure works and what are the current ways that an applicant can be selected, if there was a place for input, for change, so a general discussion about how to make recommendations on the qualified allocation plan.
Well, I think in the only area where it really touches on it is, of course, and correct me if I'm wrong, is that the population with special housing needs set aside, the 4 points.
In terms of where it's mentioned, the population that the council is serving, yes.
Well, I mean, 4 points, that's it, and then that's not even something the state is giving us, you know, an action to do. It looks like the IRS is requiring this specific set-aside.
That's correct.
So that's pretty sad to me.
Yeah, and looking at this, I know the department's hands are tied because the legislature took over a lot of the prioritization of this. I think our hands are a little bit tied because I do not believe we can stick something in for 30 points, as I understand the history here. You know what I'm saying, that we would try to come in with something that would really have an impact without doing something legislatively. But also realizing that this QAP has been set now, there won't be another one until after the legislative session. Am I correct on that?
Amendments to the QAP can happen before that.
Oh, okay. When
you see the information about the selection criteria that are prioritized by the state legislature, that doesn't necessarily mean that the points have to be exactly as they are. There is the financial feasibility and the quantifiable community participation, I think, are the only ones where it specifies the ranking in regards to the other points.
Oh, okay.
So these criteria, they're made priorities in terms of they have to be in the qualified allocation plan. They don't necessarily have to be ranked point wise as they are, except for those first two.
Okay. Oh, I'm seeing. I'm looking now at the ones that are that have the double asterisk is legislative code. Okay.
Well, that double asterisk applies to a lot of them. The vast majority of the selection criteria, it says somewhere in Texas government code, this needs to be in the QAP. It doesn't necessarily state this has to have this many points in the QAP or this has to be ranked in the QAP in a certain order. That's not typically what is stated. Financial feasibility and quantifiable community participation are exceptions to that.
So it would be possible for us to recommend that for 21 points, an organization or an applicant would get 21 points if they were creating service-enriched housing.
Right. So you could make a recommendation to raise the number of points that any one of these items has. I think that could be a recommendation made. I think that we can talk about what kind of language could be used to flush out that recommendation in the biennial plan too.
Okay. Well, I would recommend that we do that because legislative intent of our responsibility is to create more service-enriched housing. So I think since these other things came from Texas government code, we could reference a government code. Am I not correct?
Yeah.
So we should stick it in there about, I wouldn't want to mess with the ones because community participation is, I know it's a hot button at the legislature, and of course financial feasibility is a big priority, obviously, and then income levels of the tenants, 22 points. So I'm proposing for 21 points we put in an item. Is the 228 a magic number at the bottom? I mean, is that set somewhere that's the total number of points that are possible?
It's not legislatively mandated the total number of points the selection criteria are worth. However, there is a minimum that in competitive scoring an application has to meet. So if you raise the total amount of points available, you would also have to then recalculate what that minimum would be.
Oh, okay.
So there's nothing that says 228 points, period.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
I think that, I'm with Jean that we definitely need to encourage legislature to put it in statute and then propose definitely higher points than four. I think that asking for 21 may we can certainly ask for it and see where we get, but I think 4 points is not enough in my opinion. And I'd like to know, where do we define the special housing needs set aside in this? Because I know Jean has some comments that she's made to TSHAC about, how we word specific things in our guidelines, and we're looking at that. So
sure.
Where can I find that?
Sure. I provide a summary of each scoring piece within the document that I sent out yesterday. So a summary of that language is on page 15 of the document.
Of which one? The discussion?
Discussion of 2012-2013 qualified allocation plan policies.
Okay, what page again? I'm sorry.
It's okay, page 15.
Okay.
And just so you guys know, this document, each of the selection criteria that are listed here also come with where in either state or federal code they are found if you want to look up the actual specific what's in code. So I include that after each selection criteria title. So on page 15 it says selection criteria number 17, tenant populations with special housing needs.
Gotcha. I see it. Thank you.
And this, I can also say, and this is something that we can certainly make a recommendation on, is that this criteria has changed in the last 2 years. So 2 years ago, the wording of this stated that the department will award these points to applications in which at least, and it used to be 10% of the units are set aside for persons with special needs, and that was actually decreased, and I don't know if it was the last QAP or the QAB before that, to 5%.
And why was that, Ashley, just for education?
I'm sorry?
Can you, I mean,
oh, why was that? You know, I wish I knew the answer.
Okay.
I think that in terms of the process that QAP goes through, there's an internal process of how staff could see drafting changes, and then that's put forward in a public roundtable process where they go out for comment on the draft QAP, and that roundtable process typically starts, I believe, in May, and then goes throughout the summertime. And this past year, impacting the 2012-2013 QAP, there were actually several board meetings that also took up the process of making changes to the QAP as well.
Gotcha.
So it was somewhere in that process. I'm not sure who made the recommendation, if it was a developer, if it was.
There were online forums. There were additional online forums this time and additional roundtables in the fall.
Okay.
So that recommendation must have been made at some point, but that change was made between, I know at least between the 2010 QAP and the 2012 QAP. From 10 to 5. So you could always, there is some basis for changing the language within the scoring item and changing the scoring of the item. So those are two separate things.
Yeah, but I could see it absolutely being kind of a catch-22. Naturally, you'd like to see more units, but then maybe if you make it a lesser percentage, maybe more people will be inclined to do it. So, I don't know. What's better? You know, if the 10 was better or if the 5 is better, if it gets more developers incorporating that into their development.
Is there any discussion on anyone else on the phone about that particular item?
Well, this is Mark. One thing I think I noticed is this was targeted at the persons with needs. There's other factors that really address the characteristics of the development as far as providing services. So that's another potential. This is really saying target the units, but it doesn't really cover the particular services that are provided. Is that not true?
That's true. So there
are other places where you could incorporate those services that would naturally accommodate these needs, but not necessarily have to stick it under this particular one.
So yes, I think that what you're getting at there, Mark, is that there are there's an area of the QAP selection criteria, and I'm flipping to it right now. It's on page 12, tenant services.
Yes.
I don't have all the services listed under here. I just have the purpose of the scoring item and the number of points. But that has been something that has the potential in terms of if council wanted to recommend a change to the service component of what's required by developers, that there could be an addition within the tenant services item of services that are specific to the needs of people with disabilities and the elderly.
Yeah, that's exactly what I was thinking. That's certainly an area you could explore. I see it's a legislative one, but I don't know if they restrict it or leave it open to some adjustment in either the percentage of points or the nature of the points.
Yeah, because that one gets 10 points. That's quite a significant jump.
Yeah.
Well, you wouldn't. I don't think you would get a full 10 points under there, but what you could do is you could get another 3 to 4 points under that category that a developer is their scoring, and they pick their list of services. Our services might be worth 2 points or 3 points or 1 point in that category, but it still adds persons with disabilities as an incentive in other areas just than the set aside.
And you also got to consider what's easier to accomplish, focusing on the facilities or focusing on the targeting to people, and that's something where people with QAP experience would probably know better, which is the more effective route.
Well, I think that's a great point, Mark. I think that I know that. We, unless Mike, have you tried any housing tax credit developments of late?
No, I have not. I'm working on one in Florida, but it's not, I have not done a Texas one.
Okay. So, maybe that's some room for potential research, staff research we need some perspective from those who are actually year after year scouring through this for as many points as they can get, if they would feel that it would be easier to accomplish a set aside, or that it would be, what would be the best way of getting developer interest through the selection criteria? Because we've obviously found two main areas that could be possible for that. So,
right.
Yeah.
Learning tenant services. I mean, that can be very basic. That's a very broad thing. And those types of, learn how to be credit savvy or something is much different than the type of services I think that we're talking about on this council.
Right.
So yeah, maybe if you're providing a certain kind of service, you can get a certain allocation of points or something.
Okay, so what I heard so far was that we want to encourage a higher number of points for the population with special housing needs set aside. I know Jean put out 21 points. Paige thought maybe that was a little high. Do we want to try some consensus about what we recommend, or do we just want to talk about how we recommend it? Do we want to have actual points, listed in the biennial plan? Do we want to get that specific?
Wow.
I don't feel knowledgeable enough to make any kind of call on that personally, but
okay,
that's just me.
I think we would have more success if we could find a number of areas within the QAP that we could add incentive points that would be what I will call a more significant total than 4 without trying to say that total of 4 needs to be 20. Whether it be characteristics of the unit, we might find something in there where we could stick in an additional number if there were modifications for persons with special needs. Same thing on community participation. If it included service providers of a certain category, that we might could add some points in there.
Dean, how did you derive at 21?
One less than the state mandated that you can't dicker with.
Gotcha.
Is Jean still there?
Yes, I'm here.
Oh, okay.
Was I right?
At what state mandated?
Why did you come up with 21 points? And I said it because it was one less than the ones that are you can't dicker with based on the state mandate.
Yes, the top ones. Yeah, I was trying to go as high as I could without getting into the two that I know are high on the legislative list.
Okay. I mean, I'm fine recommending 21. I think more projects need to be done. You know, but I know that this is just such a highly political little game, you know, between developers, CDHCA, and the legislature, you know, that I wish I was savvy enough to figure this out, but I'm not.
Well, the only reason, and the reason I would go high, as many of you all know, we can always negotiate lower.
You want all of a sudden first team and then go cheer a little, huh?
No, but I mean, if we go high and everybody goes, that's ridiculous, well, then we can negotiate. But if we go low, then we're going to negotiate even lower. So, I mean, you know, we might as well shoot for, because we believe in this, and we are mandated by our commitment to this committee to try to produce more housing. So that's my theory on all of this.
Okay. And I think that Mike may have been touching on this, but are there any criteria that don't already exist, so something new that we would want to put in? Since we've talked about what exists and how we could add to it, but is there anything that perhaps it could be an additional selection criteria that's not there?
I'm looking. I'm reading.
Or another question more broadly is that currently the way that the point work is that the QAP has 3 set-asides right now that total 30% of the state's housing tax credit ceiling for any given year. That stays on page 1 of the document. So that is another place in which there is a structuring of points, is that that the way that the credits are distributed is that applications with the highest scores that fit into these set-asides are filled first, so we fill the requirement of at least 10% for nonprofits, at least 5% for USDA properties, and at least 15% for at-risk set-aside properties. And once those set-asides are filled, then that's where you get to the point competition, if that makes sense, where you have to score the highest that you can score, then you fit into one of these set-asides, and then after that, it's everybody else.
It's the scores remaining that didn't fit into.
Right.
Yeah.
So the highest scoring people that fit into one of these 3 set-aside categories fill those first, that's how the awards are structured, I guess you could say, is that the highest scoring ones in these 3 are filled first, and then it's the highest scoring remaining. So there's also that option of is there a want to change what the set-asides are, suggest another set-aside, suggest specifics within the set-aside. You know, we talked at the last council conference call, a committee conference call, that we really foresee nonprofits being the main creators of service-enriched housing. So, you know, is there something within the nonprofit set-aside that could be said about providing service-enriched housing? I mean, those are just opportunities, I think, that I wanted to present to you all in terms of making recommendations.
Yeah, I was going to ask that question of those developers that do have, that do serve special needs or provide special housing needs, are they nonprofit? And you're saying yes, the majority are. Maybe a possible recommendation is to increase the percentage of that set aside, perhaps.
That's definitely something that could be presented. What do other people think?
Well, yeah, like if you said at least 20% of the ceiling, and then of that 20, half of those, you know what I'm saying, there'd be a priority within the nonprofit set aside, perhaps. But that, I don't know, but I do agree that more than likely it's going to be a nonprofit, although are public housing authorities considered a nonprofit? No. In this whole set-aside situation, because they can get tax credits too, right?
Nonprofits, Jean, that much I know. I'm not sure on your second question.
Yeah, they used to. I mean, I know it's been controversial in the past. I don't know where it sits these days, but my fear, I could see that. I could see some of the housing authorities I know of, particularly in the rural areas, of taking on something like this in partnership with, you know, their local community health services or whatever. So,
Ashley, who oversees the QAP these days at, there at TDHCA?
Cameron.
So the director of our multifamily programs is Cameron Dorsey. Right below him, the manager is Teresa Morales. So they both have a large hand in the public outreach process, the creation of the document, and going before the board, those kind of things.
Because it's all great to like propose all these ideas. I want to know the feasibility and the kind of pros and cons to adjusting things. So I don't know if it would warrant like a call with those folks on it.
Okay.
You know, to help us with this. I mean, I hate to be so silly. It's not like I'm trying to create calls. I know how if you tweak with one thing, sometimes it can have severe ramifications in a bad way to a program or to even the population that you're trying to serve.
Yeah, I totally understand. And I think that, you know, we could always dedicate the next call of this committee to speaking with them. I think Teresa by that point will be on maternity leave, but I'm sure that Cameron would make the time to join us. So we can I think that would be actually a really great idea because, you know, given that I have knowledge of the policies doesn't mean that I am the expert on the practical implementation of these policies and how they are, you know, how everything comes out in the end for the developer, and I think that that's what we need, is we need that perspective.
Did somebody else just join the call?
No, it's Jean. I thought I was hitting the speakerphone and I cut myself off. It's technology. But I agree. I understand we're talking about having somebody from tax credits get on the next call.
About Cam and Cameron.
Yeah.
You know, I don't want them to get on the call and just say, nope, that's not possible. Nope, that's not.
Yeah,
Well, but I think that's, you know, maybe that's why we have this call to say, here were the things that we thought about amending.
Okay.
You know, are these feasible amendments?
Sure.
What would be the potential pitfalls of these amendments, both to developers and to those who have a authority over TDHCA housing tax credit, such as the governing board or the legislature?
Yeah. Okay.
So I think that's a great idea. Okay. So we talked about the potential of increasing the nonprofit set-aside, having a portion of that set-aside for those who are doing service-enriched housing projects. Jean asked the question, which I can look farther into, about if PHAs are eligible, they might be a source of service-enriched housing creation that could be utilized here.
But another thing I would like to consider to throw out there is just having another set aside and have it just be for special housing needs development. You know, like USDA has this 5%. Can we possibly propose something like that? Because, you know, I don't want to say that nonprofits are the only way to go. I mean, the way for this to be successful, if we have lots of people that are interested in doing these developments, including the for-profits, so you never know. You know, they may do one and it may work for them and they may want to continue doing it. So, I don't know.
Okay. I think that we can bring that forward, too, as one of the varying options that we're putting forward here. Any other suggestions? Okay. What I can do is I can write up the the potential recommendations that were made to the scoring criteria and set-aside criteria and make sure that I got everything. And then when I approach Cameron, I can let him know that these were the items that came up as items that were prioritized by the committee to look into, and then that way he'll have something to go off of when he meets with us at our next call.
Let me ask a question. I was just sitting thinking of you know, trying to make these funds more available to someone who wants to develop service-enriched housing, but the back side of that question is, do we have a handle on what that population is compared to the population of credit-eligible other people? Are we talking about 5% of the total credit-eligible population? Are we talking about 10%, 20%? Because I would think when we get into this, there would be one caution of not asking for a set-aside for 5% of the credits if we're only 1% of the population. Does that make sense?
You're saying that that there's a possibility that we wouldn't be able to find deals to fill the set aside.
Yeah, that we would create a set aside that there aren't that many applications for. On the other hand, if we could find a way to increase the point value of our population in additional categories that are already existing, then those people who want to apply would be advantaged, because they not only have the 4 points, but there's another 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 points in 3 or 4 other categories that they can get that a normal developer would bypass.
Okay. I think that that's a valid question. It seems as though, given as highly oversubscribed as this program is, the fact that we get 3 times the applications every cycle that we can actually then we can actually award. You know, I think that's a good question. I think I guess my first thought was if we're that oversubscribed, I would assume that there would be people saying, "Hey, there's a new set aside that exists. That's tax credit money I can get. I'm going to do it."
Yeah.
Who knows? But that's another question for. There's Cameron looking at me through the window. This is very weird.
We're talking at you.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, I'd invite you to the next meeting, but now you're
here. Hello? I'm talking to my Housing and Health Services Coordination Council Housing Committee, and they were asking questions about the QAP, and so I was actually going to prepare for you some of the ideas that they had in terms of how to help persons with disabilities. Hi.
You have time?
Sure.
Yeah. Well, everyone, we have Cameron Dorsey here.
So what we were talking about is I just created a breakdown of all the points that we have, and they were talking about the places where points could be. That's one of the questions is maybe increasing the amount of points for things that would help people with disabilities. So, like, I know that one of the things that we have is the population with special housing needs set aside. So the set aside of 5% of the units of a property for that population, and they were talking about, you know, could that be a higher point, you know, number of points within the total?
I think that there's room for some movement in there. The QAP is largely legislated. So the top 10 scoring items.
Oh, 10? I thought it was, oh.
The top 10.
I apologize for my incorrectness there.
Yeah, the top 10 scoring items all are in statute and in order. Those have to stay there, and there's nothing that can kind of undermine the fact that those are the top 10. We can't kind of layer two other scoring items that kind of serve a similar purpose that interferes with those top 10. But beyond that, we can play with some things. There are some other statutory requirements, and then there are a couple things in Section 42 that also have to be that have to be addressed in the selection criteria or given some preference. But we can play with the point values and that kind of thing. I can tell you that my guess for this year, this cycle, is that there will not be more than a three or four point spread between the highest scoring awarded applications and the lowest scoring awarded applications. And the total point spread, you know, somewhere in the realm of, you know, probably 10 points. Anything that's competitive is going to be within 1 point of the 1 or 2 points of the top scoring applications in the state. Our scoring system this year is incredibly flat, and it's so competitive that everyone assumes that they must score the absolute maximum points to even have a shot at it. So if you look at our pre-application log, which has 388 applications on it, for a total of over $500 million, which is 10 times the amount of funding we have to actually allocate, you'll see that there's very little distinction point-wise. So I guess the point is that 1 point is the difference between a deal getting done and a deal not getting done, and every single awarded application will most likely get elected at those points. I can say 90% certainty that they will have elected mm-hmm. those points. Mm-hmm.
And another thing that within that particular scoring item, I know that there was a change, and I can't remember if it was 1 or 2 QAPs ago, of the percentage of units that are set aside.
10%, not 5%.
Yeah, I think one of the things there has been the size of deals we do in Texas. Other states do have set aside for 10%. I was at NCSHA, the big national conference, just a few weeks ago, and a lot of other states do 10%. And I was kind of thinking through, you know, why we do 5 versus 10. And I think probably one of the big distinctions is an application in Texas can get $2 million in tax credits, and the entire allocation of a lot of states is $2-3 million in tax credits.
Mm-hmm.
And so they often have size limits of 50 units or 80 units or 100 units, and ours is, you know, 200-250 units. We haven't seen a lot of those massive size deals real recently except in the rehab realm, but I think we'll see some kind of tick up in the size of deals this year just because pricing has increased. But that's one thing. Yeah, that's not to say that we shouldn't look at 10 again by any means.
Okay. Anyone on the phone can jump in. I was just going to go over the things that we had just been discussing. There was a question about is there, within the set-asides that there are already in existence, are there ways in which specifying, say, a certain percentage of that percentage, like getting more specific into, say, like, okay, so there's a 10% nonprofit set aside. Could there be 5% of that 10% for a more specific thing that nonprofits would do?
Well, the set asides are governed by two things. One is the federal requirements. So federally, we have to allocate 10% of our ceiling to nonprofits. The state statute designates the set-aside beyond that,
mm-hmm.
and I do not believe that we have an ability to create new set-asides unless statute was specifically changed to allow that. And the reason is, I think, statute effectively describes how the balance, if it's not an explicit set-aside described in statute, then it prescribes that it must be regionally allocated in accordance with the RAF. And so you end up not being able to create something else. It has to be regionally allocated. And if you try to create some type of set-aside out of those, because it gets divided up, you know, 26 ways, end up with very small pots in some areas, and you can't actually create a set aside within those subregions because you wouldn't be able to fund an actual deal.
Okay. And I know that one thing that I, and I, this is my own lack of knowledge on, that Gina asked, is are PHAs eligible to receive tax credits?
Yes. I mean, they don't, they don't own a deal directly. They generally would be, for example, 100% owner of the general partnership interest in a partnership. And oftentimes those types of deals are structured where the PHA is also the owner of the land, and then they ground lease it to the partnership, thereby achieving 100% property tax exemption. But yes, they do quite a few PHA deals. It's a really beneficial thing a lot of times to have a PHA in the deal because of the property tax benefits.
But they're not. This is Jean. Are they eligible under the nonprofit set aside? Not considered under the nonprofit set aside, or are they?
Federally, a public housing authority would not be eligible under the nonprofit set aside.
Yeah, I knew they weren't nonprofit. I mean, they're right. Considered government, but I didn't. I don't know, for some reason I thought they might have been considered, in a sense.
They can kind of spin off nonprofit that could be eligible, but. Yeah, we generally don't see that too much. Honestly, the nonprofit set aside hasn't been a competitive set aside for several years. We don't actually say, all right, 10% of our money is set aside and nonprofits compete for that 10%. What we effectively do to meet that set aside is we just go through the regular allocation of our funds, and at the end of the day, right before we make awards, we make sure that 10% went to nonprofits. And if that has happened, we've satisfied that set aside.
Right. So it's like you.
Oh, okay. So that wouldn't give us. We were talking about expanding that and getting some prioritization that way for service-enriched housing.
Okay. It may become more competitive. It hasn't been at all. The way this year's QAP is structured, it might be. It could be competitive this year. I don't know. We'll kind of see how it plays out. What we would do in case where we didn't kind of go through the process and hit the 10% is we would skip some for-profit deals, go to lower-scoring nonprofit deals, and award those lower-scoring nonprofit deals, even though they weren't the highest scoring, to meet that federal requirement.
Okay.
That's how we would deal with that set aside. But it hasn't. We haven't done that.
What I was thinking, yeah, isn't it that once everyone's been scored, that's when you fill up whoever the highest scoring of the set asides are. Is that right?
Well, so the at-risk set aside and the USDA set asides work a bit differently than the nonprofit. So what we do is. Let's say we have $40 million and we take 15% of that, which would be $6 million. So we take $6 million out of the 40 and we say, all right, this is at risk. Now, within at risk, a third of the at risk set aside is for USDA deals. So 10% would go to at risk and at least 5% has to go to USDA deals that are in the at risk set aside.
Mm-hmm.
So that's that pot. And they play separately, and then that pot does not mix really
with the other
pot. So we take what's left, and which is $34 million, and we would regionally allocate it to 26 subregions, 13 state service regions that are in the rural, and then we would just go through the allocation process. We would look at who's highest scoring, and we would slate them to be recommended for an award.
Mm-hmm.
And when we do that, at the end, we say, all right, did we happen to meet the 10% nonprofit set aside? And every year that I've been at the department, I believe we've just naturally, kind of organically met that set aside because there are enough good nonprofits that are competitive to get awarded.
Okay. Another topic of conversation was about the tenant services item and, you know, whether or not there could be additional services listed as possibilities that would be specifically more supportive services for people with disabilities. That was another idea that was thrown out there.
Yeah, I think that we're always kind of looking for feedback on the list of services. We do get public comment almost every year on the list of services.
Mm-hmm.
I know that there are quite a few for-profits that comment on the services and expanding them, you know, just from an economic, you know, profit-motivated perspective, they're incentivized to provide pretty competitive services in some circumstances. So for elderly transactions, I know that they wanted to expand some of the services like, you know, weekly or twice weekly trash pickup at the door type service and some things like that. But we're open to that every year, expanding what we offer there. Where we get into some problems is when they become mm-hmm. medical related services.
Right.
And that's where we start rubbing up against potential federal rule violations. So.
Right.
I think another one was adding a category. I think Mike had mentioned
yes,
about special housing needs development. It's adding a category
somewhere. I mean, below the ones that
right.
Yes. It's possible to add a category or just change a category as well. We can do various things. There are some limitations with adding categories, but I think we eliminated some this year and we added some. So. We just have to make sure we don't kind of end up with a situation where we compromise those top 10 and make sure that we always continue to address the other outside of the top 10 that are statutory or the ones that are federally required.
I think that's pretty much where we were until you walked in. So let's open it up. Jean, Paige,
Mark.
Mike.
This is Mark. I just a quick clarification on your tenant services. That's one of the top 10. So does that? How much adjustment can you do to that? You said that was legislatively imposed. How?
Well, it's statute doesn't go into a significant amount of detail.
Yeah.
They actually provide a list of services, and we can modify that list pretty easily. I think we added some this year. We actually increased the requirement for services as well this year so that they have to do more if they elect those points. Even for smaller deals, they have to continue to provide more services. So we can do some modifications there. It has to remain kind of compliant with the intent, which is tenant services. So you kind of can't go outside of that and say, you know, kind of build in something funky like, say, you know, oh, well, it's a service that they're located next to a bank or something like that. Yeah, you kind of get into, that starts to get into, you know, twisting it up a little bit too much. But,
you could use the term service enriched, some of the definitional terms in that, correct?
Oh, yeah, we could build in some services there that could be part of the menu of options. But one thing we did do this year is we did not mandate which services of the list we didn't mandate them to select which services at application. They had to say, yeah, we're going to do, you know, 6 points worth of these services. One thing that's always, you know, an important consideration is these are oftentimes conceptual when we start out, and we've been putting the services that they elect at application in their MUR, their land use restriction agreement, and saying, all right, these are the ones that you have to do for now and forever. And that's not really the best way to be responsive to the actual makeup of your tenant population. So we've modified that so they would elect the number of points they want to do, but then when they actually place the development in service and figure out who they're serving, they can make some adjustments. So they can be like, well, we tried that one, but you know, we didn't really get folks weren't real responsive, they didn't use it much, so we're going to try this other one out. And because it's the same point value, they can swap those things out.
there any other questions for Cameron? I think the one thing that had come up was trying to get a perspective of some of an entity that, that does apply frequently for our housing tax credits as to, you know, can we try to anticipate how they would feel, you know, in terms of would they feel it be advantageous, not advantageous, if there were certain things that that were changed, such along the lines of what we just been talking about. Would they, I mean, I know that it's such a, such a competitive program, it seems as though, like you were saying, they try to get every single point that's possible.
You know, this is going to be my first tax credit cycle that I've observed of them by now, and there's one thing that seems to consistently happen, and that is we allocate all of our credits from one year, and then we go into the rulemaking process, and because of the limited amount of time between when we start making the rules to when they actually have to submit an application, they're already going through the site selection process. And so rather than there being a real policy discussion surrounding the QAP, it gets kind of hijacked by, well, I've already picked my sites, and I want those sites to score well.
Mm-hmm.
And I want this concept to score well. And so we get off in left field and away from kind of policy discussions and much more toward, you know, well, you know, I have this site out here and it doesn't score well the way it's written that way, so I want the language to be modified to write this, say it this way.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we need to start looking at what we want to do rather than for 2013 right now. We need to start thinking about what we want to do for 2014 and start having a discussion about that, because the reality is that we're not going to be able to kind of make some real policy changes and direct feedback to be about policy related issues if we don't allow folks the lead time to actually modify their development models and how they go about site selection and those types of things before they have to submit an application. And so we should, and one of my goals is to try to think about 2013 and 2014 in light of that reality.
Mm-hmm. Any other questions?
Okay. Thanks for coming in.
Sure.
Yeah. Yeah, thank you. We're probably going to switch to the consolidated plan now. So.
Okay. Well, I will talk to you whenever you're done.
Okay. Great.
Bye,
Cameron. Bye. And we may need to table this depending on people's time.
Yeah, it's like right up to 2-3 now. So do y'all want to wait till next time
to talk about consolidated plan?
That would work better for me. This is Jean. I'm sorry. I've got a full agenda.
All right. We're going to push there because we talked about
sure.
it next time. But
sure.
They happened. He wandered right past.
That's fine.
Yeah. It'll give us time to read the 30-something pages you sent.
There we go. There.
About today.
And what I and we can and I can give more than I already have. But what I provided regarding the consolidated plan was parts of the strategic plan. So that's a major section of the consolidated plan. It's called the strategic plan, and that sets out priorities. And so the section of the strategic plan that was about special needs priorities is what I actually extracted from the larger document. So that's just so you have an understanding. And that document was created in 2009. So there's been some changes to our funding and to our programs, but that's what is the existing document for the agency as it stands right now in prioritizing funding for programs that are required to be prioritized under the consolidated plan. So that includes our home funding source, our emergency shelter grants, which is now going to be the emergency solutions grants, and there's a lot of change going on in that program. Mm-hmm. But just so you guys know, those are the two main programs that PDHCA has control over that are guided by the consolidated plan. All right.
So any next steps that anyone wants to talk about? Are there any burning outstanding questions before we meet again?
No, I'm assuming that maybe you can get with Cameron and continue to kind of mill over these ideas and how to best, I certainly understand we can make recommendations in our plan as far as having statute changed in the community. So if we can do that, then, like as Jean said, we need to do everything we can to promote the development of more housing, service-enriched housing. So I really hope that we continue to push on with that particular topic.
Okay. I think that we can. Is there a specific funding source you were thinking of, or are we continuing with the ones that I have listed here?
Well, I'm talking specifically about having the QAP changed.
Oh, okay.
Tax credits, I guess. I mean, or any of it, any and all of it, actually. I mean, so, but specifically tax credits.
Okay.
Anybody else?
Alrighty. Well, as it says on your agenda, the next meeting is set for February 8th, and I will make sure that I have my conversation with Cameron and get any further clarifications to you before that time.
Look at the same time on the 8th, Ashley?
Yes.
If that works, if 2 p.m. works for everyone.
Okay.
Yes.
Yes,
it does for me.
Okay, great. Thank you guys so much.
Thank you.
Bye.
Bye.